Okay, so this is an unbelievable halacha. We're in Parak Vav, Halacha Gimel, right? Chapter 6, Halacha number 3, right? In Hilchot Deot. Mitzvah al kol adam, le'ehov et kol echad ve'echad mi'shel kuvo. There is a mitzvah to love every Jew, kigufo, as you do your own body, as you love yourself. Now, that's very easy to say. This is something that's on every school child's lips. There isn't a Jew, whoever went to a Jewish experience, who doesn't know the pasuk ve'avta l'recha kamocha. But of course, there are two questions here. The first question is, how could you be commanded to love? Like, that's a very difficult. What does that mean? You don't love him. He's a pig, right? Pardon? That's also a question. How you're commanded to love Hashem, right? But in this case, and that's a whole discussion in Hilchot Yesod HaTorah, but here, it's a little more practical here, because people struggle with the question of Ahavat Hashem, but it's difficult for them to get their hands around it, and there's a whole year's course of study on that here to write about, you know, that which is intangible, and I understand. But here you got a guy, and he just does things that really annoys you, you know? It's a whole discussion. The Rambam in Hilchos Avelos talks about, you know, whether this is specifically imo b'toro mitzvot, dafka Jew who fulfills mitzvot. The Lubavitcher Rebbe has his take on it. Maybe we'll get to it. But let's assume for the moment that this means any Jew. You have a chiyuv to love every and any Jew, even if you have a chiyuv to hate the part of him that does bad. Right? So the first question is how you do that. Yeah?
What does it mean to love someone to begin with?
That's right. What does it mean to love someone to begin with? How do you, and there's the first thing is, how could you be commanded to love? And the second is, how exactly do you do that? Right? This is, by the way, a mitzvah taseh, right? In the Rambam and in the Sefer HaChinuch. It's one of the positive commandments. It's mitzvah taseh number resh vav, okay? Mitzvah vav lecha kamocha, appears in Kedoshim. How do you fulfill this mitzvah? Okay?
Does the army, I mean, being in the army, just the experience itself, does it teach you how to love your friend as yourself?
No.
How to be a true
friend? No. I think that you learn this just like we're doing it. In my mind. Right. It's a good question. It comes from Torah. In other words, that doesn't mean that a person who doesn't have Torah can't learn to love his fellow human being.
Did you experience it a lot in the army after they come off?
Every microcosm of human behavior that you experience out of the army, you experience in the army. You experience people who love their fellow human beings, you experience people who don't. You experience people who are incredibly fine people, and you experience pigs. And everywhere in between, right? And the challenge of not judging your fellow human beings, it's there just as much. So put that aside. It's not really the issue here, right? There's a mitzvah to love every person. And by the way, kigufo. How could you ever love, like, even if you could figure out how to love another person, how could you love another person as yourself? So, and by the way, one of the challenges here, right, which is alluded to by sort of the idea that you have to love your fellow human being no matter what his space is how do you do this and avoid being judgmental? Right? Like, I was talking to somebody today who was struggling with the fact that he felt when he was in high school that when he didn't wear tzitzis, people were looking down on him because he didn't wear tzitzis. So it doesn't matter. Like, for me, the question there is not whether makes sense for one person to look down on another person for something like that. That's obviously ridiculous, right? But the question is, how do you avoid that? How do you avoid that? You know, like, and it could be as simple as the fact that we go on a negev tiyul, and there's like a, you know, nice little hike there, and maybe somebody isn't up to the hike, and someone else kind of looks askance at him because he didn't do the hike, right? Or somebody likes to run the whole thing, and somebody else is huffing and puffing, and someone looks down. How do you avoid that, right? So there are a couple of ideas, okay, that I think are worth putting into our lexicon, okay, when it comes to ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha, right? The first is, how do I fulfill this mitzvah, right? So the Mefarshim say, right, okay, the Mefarshim say that there are two issues here that can help you fulfill this mitzvah. The first is, if you focus on the Tzelem Elokim that is connected to each human being. In other words, if you're a random creation, and I'm a random creation, right? And we weren't created, we're just here, then there really isn't any reason that one should be better than the other, right? You can decide that the other person's always better than me, or you can decide that you're always better than the other person, it doesn't really matter. But if we're all created by Hashem, and if somehow there's a Tzelem Elokim inside of each one of us, which is a difficult term to define. But let's assume for the moment that there's a part of me that connects to Hashem, right? Well then, that aspect of Mikey that connects to Hashem, and that aspect of me that connects to Hashem, by definition can't be different. Because they both come from Hashem. They're both created by Hashem. And if you can focus on the part of you that comes from Hashem, if you recognize that you're a creation, that, to my mind, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe says this in the Tanya, is the easiest way to begin to develop a relationship with this mitzvah. And by the way, conversely, if you can judge another human being, if you can look askance at another human being, if you don't do that which you could do for another human being simply from the mitzvah of Ahavta Le'echa Kamocha, it's a pogam in your emunah. There's a flaw in your relationship with Hashem. Right? Even, by the way, this. Like this experience that we just had here. Right? You have someone, made a mistake, how do you help them deal with it? The second issue is whatever you do coming mitoch ahava? That's the biggest question to ask yourself. You know, like, this is a good example. You have an issue. Your boy stepped over the line. You have parameters. How do you discover the consequences? So, very often, you know, Rebbeim are human beings, just like students. Sometimes you just want to react, you know? You always have to ask yourself, is this coming mitoch ahava? If you can't find it in yourself that whatever you're doing is coming because you care about this person, then you're better off not doing anything. Right? If you're, I don't know, if you're walking out in the street and you see somebody's lights are on, somebody left his lights on. Okay? Now, if it was your car, and you realize your daughter had taken the car, and it was your car, and it's parked there in the Rover, so can you imagine how much effort you would make to find her, right, so that you could tell her to turn the lights off? But if it's some car that you never saw before, right, so then you might not think about it. That's a pagam in your relationship with the mitzvah of Ve'ahavta Le'echa Kamocha. There's a flaw. And if you really understood that this person is created by Hashem, and this car is created by Hashem, and that car is in your life because you have an opportunity to do mitzvah, you wouldn't be able to walk by that car and not do a mitzvah. And by the way, I'm modeh that there's lots of instances in every given day that my level of Ve'ahavta Le'echa Kamocha is not where it should be. Now, there is one exception to this rule. I'm going to be okay to walk by a situation like that and not do anything, and not have it be a flaw in your relationship with this mitzvah.
You're putting yourself in danger?
Okay, I mean, that's an extreme. Obviously, if there's gunfire on the street, so you don't have to go and turn off the lights, that's about priorities, I hear that. No, I'm just coming to Oraita, and somebody's car has lights on.
It's Shabbos?
No, that's against halacha. I mean, that's another exception. Okay, fine, yeah. Not what I'm looking for, but yeah. Because that's understandable. Like, obviously, if, you know, somebody left his lights on. If you left your lights on Shabbos, by the way. If I left my lights on in the car on Shabbos, I wouldn't do anything about it. So I'm not sure that it's a pogam in that mitzvah to figure out how to turn his lights off. If there's danger involved, you're not chayav in the mitzvah of Ve'ahavta Le'echa Kamocha. But when would you have an instance where there is the mitzvah of Ve'ahavta Le'echa Kamocha, but you make a decision which is not a flaw in Ve'ahavta Le'echa Kamocha? Last guess?
If you're occupied with another mitzvah.
If you're occupied with another mitzvah. That becomes an interesting question. Right. What mitzvot would allow you not to do Ve'ahavta Le'echa Kamocha? And the most obvious example is if you're already involved in the mitzvah of Ve'ahavta Le'echa Kamocha. Pardon? Yeah, kibur aveim, whatever the mitzvah, but specifically the mitzvah of Ve'ahavta Le'echa Kamocha. In other words, if I'm coming... Well, any mitzvah can exempt you from another mitzvah. It depends on the situation. Pardon?
Are you saying if you're involved with the Ve'ahavta Le'echa Kamocha for one person?
Yeah, especially
you have to stop and then help every person you see.
No,
so that depends on the circumstance.
Like I'm saying, like if you're on the Ve'ahavta Le'echa Kamocha with like your immediate like relative, does that take precedence over Ve'ahavta Le'echa Kamocha with your neighbor or a complete stranger? Maybe?
Right, that's also true. You could have different priorities, right? And that becomes very difficult. This rule comes, it's not quite the same in Tzedakah. This rule you find actually in the halachos of Kibud Aveim, and in certain halachos that deal with Pikuach Nefesh, like in Hilchos Shabbos. For example, if you're a Rebbe and your parent are drowning, who do you save first? You save your Rebbe because your Rebbe gives you all of a bar and your parent doesn't. And there's a whole sort of grade of priorities for who you save first that's drowning in a river. You know, so the rabbis had a slow day afternoon one week, and they're imagining like dozens of people in the river, and you have to pick out who you're going to save. But the idea is that there is a prioritization process. That's true, right? And it's not as simple as you might think. For example, you might think that you should love, you know, you should help your brother before you help a stranger. But if the stranger, for example, is someone who's destitute, and the love that your brother, you know, needs. So this is sometimes a complex question. But I still go back to the original, which is the question is what your motivation is. Right? If you're on your way to a raita, because, I don't know, you're on Torahnut, and you're doing Torahnut, it's a pain, you don't really want to do it, right? So the first issue is that you're missing the opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah the way it's supposed to be fulfilled. Because doing Torahnut and bringing the food here on time is just as much a mitzvah of as giving tzedakah. Right? Because if you were waiting for your breakfast, you would want the Torah to come on time. So it makes sense that you should do the same thing. In fact, if you really get down to it, there are certain, you know, the Gedolim used to run to do these types of things. There are legends of Arya Levine in his old age running places because he had a chance to do such a mitzvah. You should run to Torahnut because what an opportunity to do Vavtorecha Kamocha. But fine. But if you're on your way to do Torahnut, you've got everybody's breakfast, right? And then someone's lights are off. Someone's lights in his car. So you put down your food and you go running around all the stores and then nobody has breakfast. So you did fulfill a mitzvah of Avtorecha Kamocha for the guy who has a car, but you kind of messed up on it for everybody else. So that becomes about prioritizing. So that's the first issue, right? The second issue is that Avtorecha Kamocha, and this is a debatable issue, there's some Mefarshim, for example, that goes, Maimonios, who says that this mitzvah applies not to every Jew, that if somebody, for example, is a you know, Porek Ol Batorah or Mumala Lachis, or, you know, person is an Apikoras and they are against all of Judaism, that you don't have to love them in the same way that others do. However, there are enough Mefarshim that disagree with that. In fact, the Rambam himself does not quote his halach of Mechus Avelus, describing this only as a person who's Shomer Torah Mitzvot, which implies that the Rambam here believes that this mitzvah actually applies to everybody. And there are plenty of Mefarshim who interpret the Rambam that way. The Lubavitcher Rebbe believes you do have a chiyuv v'avtorecha kamocha for every Jew, no matter whether they're chotei or not.
And non-Jews?
Non-Jews, you have a mitzvah, but it's not the same mitzvah. It's not the mitzvah v'avtorecha kamocha, it's v'asita yashar v'atov. In other words, the level of it doesn't really impact what you do, unless there's an instance of a non-Jew and a Jew. And sometimes you would still help the non-Jew first if there's an issue of Eva in terms of how it looks and how it's perceived and Chilul Hashem. But it makes sense that...
an issue of Tzal Malachim, aren't the Goyim sure. Also? So why is it...
So there are two opinions. It's a good question. There are two opinions on that. One opinion as to the difference between your relationship with your fellow Jew and the relationship with the non-Jew is that the fellow Jew at this point has the opportunity to do mitzvot that the non-Jew doesn't. And therefore, the love for someone who does mitzvot should be necessarily different. That makes sense. And the other possibility is a general rule that just like you should love your parent more than you love your uncle, and you should love your uncle more than you love, you know, your friend, and you should love your friend more than you love a stranger, and I'm not giving you halachic parameters just as an example. So the same is true. In other words, like, you know, the Christian should be loving the Christian before he loves the Jew. And the Jew should be loving the Jew before he loves the Christian. And that makes sense, but it doesn't mean that in any way it denigrates the Christian, chas v'shalom. That's not the issue. It's very rare that we have these circumstances, but sometimes those circumstances are very difficult. And sometimes I could tell you exactly what the halacha is. I have no idea if I'd be able to live up to it. Imagine you're in a lifeboat, and there's just no room. There's room for one more person, right? It's the Titanic. Remember, there's this movie, the Titanic, and all those people in the sea. You can't take 200 people on a lifeboat. You'll all drown. So you take another, and there's some lifeboat expert. He happens to design lifeboats, and he's in the lifeboat with you. And he tells you can take one more person, okay? And there's people in the sea. And you see a fellow, and he's the gabbai in your, you know, in a minyan that you recognize. And then you see another fellow, and he's a priest, right? How do you decide who to take? So the halacha says that if you were a priest, you would have to take the priest. But if you're a Jew, you have an obligation to take the gabbai. So I can tell you that that's the halacha. Can I tell you that I have the strength? And by the way, you're not allowed halachically to jump in and say, you two, save yourself. Not allowed to do that.
Not allowed to give up
your own life for someone else's, unless there's certain circumstances that don't apply here, right? So that's a very difficult situation. So it's understand that just because we happen to know what the dry halacha is, doesn't mean that that make it easy. In fact, I think that it's something to be proud of, that within Judaism that halacha is so difficult. It's not a given, it's difficult, right? But nonetheless, the question is, it's Perek Vav gets into how we relate to our fellow human beings, how we interrelate with each other. And the Rambam starts it off by saying, know that in your relationship with your fellow human being, certainly with your fellow Jew, it has to be motivated by love. If it's not motivated by love, you're finished before you start, you know? And we're going to see what just happened is a form, it's a very difficult form of tochacha. Like, you sometimes have a chiyuv, you have a responsibility to the community, to the individual. By the way, don't think that that means you get it right. Tusa, I don't know if I got this right. I don't know if this is the right way to do it. It's a very complicated question. You know, the issue of being malbin pnei chavercha berabim, of embarrassing a person in public, is a very serious issue. There are very few issues that are as serious as that issue. So, you know, you have to be reasonably sure that you're not stepping over that line, and that's why you have to have a discussion with the person about a very difficult issue. Are you sure, just because you think you're motivated by love for that person, are you sure you're motivated by love for that person, right? So that's an interesting question. I don't know, for example, in fact, I'm reasonably sure that I would not have done something like that in October. Because I don't have the relationship with you in October that I have now. Like, there isn't a boy in this year that I don't love. I think you guys are amazing guys. That goes for every single one of you. All of you in different ways. I do. So that allows me to kind of give you mussar sometimes in certain ways, because I hope that you'll be able to receive it in a positive fashion, and I can still be wrong. But at least I know for me that I think that it's motivated by love, but most people don't think about that.
What difference does it make whether it's motivated from if it's going to be the same action?
Pardon?
What difference does it make if it's motivated by love or not, if it's going to be the same action?
Two things. First of all, I don't think it's going to be the same action.
I'm saying, let's say it is, though.
No. I'm saying by definition, when an action is motivated by love, it becomes a different action. It's different in terms of what you're actually doing. It's different in how it's perceived, how it's received. It's just a different action.
I'm saying, let's say...
That's the first thing. And the second thing is because there's a mitzvah to spread love in the world.
So
right?
For spiritually, you're bringing more love into the world?
Yeah, and it impacts how these things are perceived. You know, I'll give you an example, maybe to make this real. Is that okay? Let's say that, we're in the middle of Rambam Shir. Okay? And a fellow walks in, and he's a multimillionaire. And I think, wow, if I chop a shmooze with him, I'll get millions of dollars for a writer. So I just stand up and say, look, I'll be back in a minute. And I go off and walk with him, and you guys are left here hanging, right? While you could make a case for saying raising money for yeshiva is a valuable thing, I think that that's the wrong motivation. That's just my personal opinion. By the way, I can't tell you for sure that I'm right, but I think that's the wrong motivation. On the other hand, if I see a guy walks in, he happens to be a multimillionaire, but I know that he just lost his son. And I know that he's devastated. And I realize that this guy, he's about to fall apart. And so I interrupt the shiur and I say, you'll just have to trust me. And I go off and do the same thing. And I walk off with him for half an hour just to be menachem him. Not because he's... by the way, how you could know that your motivations are so pure that it's not about the money is a good question. But let's say I think that, right? The fact that I'm doing it from a different motivation ends up that the action will be a good action.
Right, but there you're doing two different things. So let's say someone walks in and drops books. Okay, if I have to learn if I come over, I get up, walk over, help him pick up books. Let's say someone walks in and drops books. I say, oh man, if I go get up and pick up his books, everyone's going to think I'm this great person. I'm doing the exact same action. One of them is completely self-righteous and is all about my ego. The other one is out of baffle. It makes no difference.
Both of them are good actions, but the first is on a higher level. And it will impact you on a higher level. You'll get more out of it. The action will be done on a higher level, and therefore the world changes in a different way. That's basically what happens. And by the way, this is not just a hypothetical. This is the reality. Over the years, you discover that this is really true. People who do good things with good motivation, those good things, they just do better things. I know that doesn't sound like an Ivy League sentence, but you get what I'm saying, right? It's like wearing tefillin. If you wake up in the morning, you put on a pair of tefillin, you say the bracha, right? And then you take them off. You fulfill the mitzvah tefillin. But if you put on the same tefillin in the morning, right, and you take a moment while you're saying the bracha, and you think about some of the ideas that tefillin represents, you know, the idea that this is the beginning of my day, and what am I going to do with my day, the action is a completely different action, even though physically it's the same action, right? Now, it is important to say that if person number one puts on tefillin with no kavanah whatsoever, says the bracha, takes them off, and he's done, if person number two has this enormous experience of kavanah about tefillin but never puts on the tefillin, that at least from a halachic perspective, the first person is better off because he put in a pair of tefillin. And that's the belief that actions impact not only ourselves, but the world around us. So picking up books for someone changes the world. It's just that most people aren't able to see that. But going back to... Yeah.
Is it the first person is better off?
The person who put on tefillin without any kavanah.
He's better off?
Yeah.
Why
because he's actually worn tefillin. He's done something.
The other one's also wearing tefillin.
No. I'm saying
the second guy does not put on tefillin. Oh,
he just has a great
phenomenal experience about
right?
It.
Right. You meet people who, you know, it's a dangerous thing. Sometimes you talk so much about whatever it is that you don't really need to actually do it. Right? And this is a dangerous thing to say, but there are certain aspects of Christianity where Judaism and Christianity diverge exactly on this issue. Yeah?
He says, you have to love your fellow as yourself.
Right.
Where does he define how you're loving yourself?
Well, so if you love yourself, like think about what it means to love yourself, okay? If you love yourself for yourself, then that's arrogance. That's hedonism. That's self-centeredness, right? But if you love yourself because the self that is you is a gift from Hashem, and how you develop that self, you give back to the world, you're really loving Hashem in loving yourself. And if you love your fellow human being because Hashem created that human being, and that's another self and has the impact to give to the world, then there's really no difference between loving yourself and loving the other human being. Now, that's easy to say. It's very hard to do. But that's at least the way to get there. You know, there's some unfortunately who say it's not possible for a person to completely fulfill this mitzvah ever. Like, how could you possibly love yourself? But you can try. Some people believe you can actually get there. I don't know. I hesitate to say that I think something is wrong, but certainly everybody can agree that the value of pursuing this, right, is valuable. The second side of this coin, which is what we're going to get to in the coming halachot, is sort of how this affects the way you treat people in other spheres, like, for example, the ability to be non-judgmental. Like, if you can fulfill the mitzvah of Ve'avta Ve'echa Kamocha, then you won't be able to be judgmental about another human being. Because who are you to judge the person that Hashem created that's standing in front of you, right? That's an easy thing to say. It's hard to do, right? Like, I make jokes about certain things. Like, I don't know. What's a good example? Safe example. Is Zevi here? Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Okay. Because I want to talk about it anyway. So, there's no difference between the way that I look at Zevi with a haircut or without a haircut. Except for the fact that he happens to have less hair. Right? On the other hand, if I somehow have a different judgment of a person because he has long hair or short hair, something's wrong. There's just something wrong with that. So it could be that there's a practical issue that, you know, whether it's difficult to put tefillin on long hair, right, where Zevi had a challenge and Levi has it easier, right? It could be that there are all sorts of external factors that have to do with these things. But that doesn't mean that you can be judgmental about another person. How do you get there?
You mean like that person's a stoner because he has long hair?
Pardon?
Like that person's a stoner because he has long hair?
Right, exactly, whatever it is. There was a woman, there was a person who came to visit our yeshiva from a different yeshiva high school in America. And you remember we had these visits and, you know, somebody, either me or Scott, would always sort of be nervous, you know, are the guys here and is everything going on, whatever it is. And it's a very difficult balance because you don't want to all of a sudden start telling guys to do this, that, and the other when a visitor comes. That's not healthy. On the other hand, it's fair to assume that if a person comes and you have an achrayus or responsibility to the image of the yeshiva and there are other boys who could be coming, that you put a little effort into it, so that's fine. Anyways, there was one day and this person came to see the yeshiva and we were over at Akoto. And we were over at a hotel because Richard Joel came to speak, whatever. There's a whole bunch of you in the back. And so this person came from Yeshiva High School, and we were talking, whatever, and you guys had all left. And she just wanted to see, like, you know. So I said, look, I'm walking over to my hotel. You know, I wanted to see what Richard's going to say and, you know, what, where, you know, you guys are at. And so this person walked in with me. And she wanted to know where there were a whole bunch of guys. Were hotel guys, your guys, some other guys, I think from the TIV. So I said, oh, there are my guys, and I waved, and a whole bunch of you waved back. And this person said to me, oh, they look like normal yeshiva guys. So I didn't say anything because, like, you know, I said, fine. I know the truth, right? But I thought, like, you have to struggle with a comment like that. How can how a person looks tell you whether they're normal yeshiva guys? So don't get me wrong. I understand that if a person walks into a yeshiva and there's 40 guys and they all have dreadlocks and ear piercings and whatever, that says a certain statement and image. But that's because of our failings. It's because of our flaws. It's not because that's how reality should be. So the more you're able to remove that judgment, I got this from working in Israelite. When I first came to Israelite, so there were people who would walk in and out of the door. And by the way, if you're here in the summer and you have a chance to go visit and to go see or to go staff an Inward Bound program, it is an incredible experience. Incredible. Life-changing incredible. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable to be part of it. Unbelievable to hear what's taught there. Unbelievable to meet some of the students that come. It's really an amazing experience, especially before college. So if any of you are around, just talk to Matal. Highly recommend it. But putting that aside, you know, I came from the yeshiva world. I taught in Gush. I taught in a miftar. And, you know, people walked in. The big issue was, you know, it's sphero, so you're not shaving little. You get people walking in, and every type of haircut. I remember once we had a person who came in a mohawk. I can't imagine how much time it must have taken this person to do it. But he had, like, bald here, and like this, and like spikes. You know what I'm talking about? Like out of the movies. And he walks in and sits down. And by this time, I had been teaching at Israelite a bunch of years. So I didn't really think about it.
Tough guy? Was he,
pardon?
Was he kind of like a big
no, he wasn't a big tough guy. He was a big tough guy. He looked just like you. Anyway, so, right? So, pardon?
He's ran out of the right products. Like, you use Elmer's glue.
It's not really up there in my priority to know. But anyway, so, glue. Anyway, so I didn't really think about it, you know? But when I first would have gotten here, it would have freaked me out, you know? And there's a plus to that and a con to that, like how you find the balance between your externality and you have a responsibility as a person to know that the way you carry yourself does affect the people around you, but you also have a responsibility as a self to get beyond the externalities and see the person inside and love the person for who he is, yeah?
I see that, because I have a problem when I hear people say you shouldn't judge someone based on how they look. Because if someone has, let's say, a physical deformity that they obviously did not choose to have, then you shouldn't judge them. But if someone is dressing a certain way or puts their hair in a certain way, I don't feel bad making... I wouldn't use the word judge, and I would not definitely not use the word stereotype. But I would not feel bad making an assessment or an evaluation and maybe even a prediction about this person's personality. Because let's say, for example, just to clarify, for example, I get that. For example, let's say someone puts their hair like that. They're sending off the message that I want you to think that I don't care what society says. That's the message they're sending.
Okay.
If someone comes in here, you know, with, like, really, like, unsneas or whatever, they're saying, like, I think my body's all that, or I want you to see my butt. You're sending messages. If you
absolutely
pick a flowy B'nai Akiva skirt, you're saying, you know, like,
absolutely,
I'm a B'nai Akiva girl. Then, so, like, why would it be bad? Whatever. Why would it be bad to...
I think we're confusing two topics. I think there's a difference between assessing what message a person's externality carries and judging them for it. In other words, when I'm talking about judgment, and maybe the semantics of the language don't allow for enough definition, I'm talking about making a judgment call as to whether a person is to the value of a person. Is a person a good person, a bad person? Like, I've heard people say, like, you don't want to go to that place. They're a bunch of really bad guys. You should see their hair. Like, I look at a comment like that. I don't know what to do with it, right? On the other hand, the fact that a person has, you know, certain externalities, whether it's dress or hair or all sorts of other, you know, exteriors, yeah, it says a lot about them, and you can learn a lot about them. You just have to be very careful that it doesn't allow you to judge who they really are.
Right, but if
that's what I mean.
How does it say a lot about them, though, if, like, different places have different codes of also what's happening?
Well, let's take an example. Exactly. Let's take an example, okay? Let's say that, you know what, let's use the yeshiva as an example. Let's say that a guy comes into yeshiva, and we're so open that we won't say anything to anybody. Guy comes into yeshiva in a bathing suit. He's got no shirt on, no socks, whatever, long hair, whatever image you want. Okay. And he sits there and he says, can I come learn here? And we say, we'd love to have you. Right? So maybe I'll say, please wear a kippah. You know, here's a kippah. Oh, he's so excited. It's Bukhari and he's into it. It's cultural. Okay. If a guy like that could sit here for a whole year, never mind the cold, with just a bathing suit on for a whole year, so it says to me that he's not conscious of the environment that he's in. He's not paying attention to... But that's my point. So extremes are easier. Less extremes are less easy. If I walk out in the morning, you know, the other day, I woke up late. I wanted to get to Minyan. I came back. I had to help my kids. I didn't even have a chance to brush my hair. Right? Drives my wife nuts when I go out the door without brushing my hair because they think it's not mechubad, you know, covered atar or whatever. But that's the way it is. So I came in that day and I was a little disheveled, whatever. Now maybe my disheveled is different from your disheveled and maybe you don't even think it's disheveled, but to me it was disheveled. Somebody who's discerning could notice, you know, so there's a message there. It could be he's too busy. It could be something's not important enough. He doesn't respect the place he's going to enough. Because I assure you that if I had a meeting with Rav Avigdor Nevenzahl that day or Lahavdil, President Obama, I would have made sure to brush my hair. So that's a message. The base manager isn't important enough to me. It's a problem.
So if you come from a Jamaican neighborhood where no one would have dreadlocks, you should cut your dreadlocks if you have a business meeting or something?
Well, no. Now you're getting into the specifics. That's a complicated question. You know, I could imagine certain societies in traditional Judaism 2,000 years ago where everybody had long hair, right? And if everybody had long hair and that was the social norm, then what would be the big deal about having long hair? It's an interesting question, by the way, about when and why these norms change and how, right? But what I'm talking about is not the message of the externality. I'm just talking about our ability not to judge a person. Let's use an even easier example. You go into Mea Shearim, right? Or you know what? Yesterday afternoon, a fellow came. Boy was looking at the yeshiva for next year. Happened to be or heard about the yeshiva, whatever. I don't know, is he right for the yeshiva? Is he not? He'll apply, we'll see. So he came in, and his father was with him, right? And his father had a long kapata and a beard, whatever it is, right? There would have been a time, to be honest, where, you know, that would have caused me to think, like a guy with a kapata and Israel, whatever. I don't think about these things anymore. I meet parents who have kapatas, I meet parents with earrings and everywhere in between. It's not my issue, right? So, right, it's not my issue, right? And afterwards, I was thinking about it, because I love that he happens to be a really, really nice fellow and whatever, and we had a really nice conversation. I really think about it. Like, at a certain point, you just don't notice you're wearing kapata. It's like you noticing whether I have a gray sweatshirt or not. And I imagine there's some people here, it doesn't even occur to them that a Rebbe or a Rosh Hashiva doesn't have a tie and a jacket or a hat or whatever. And there's some people here who right away, it's like it's a glaring, like, how could the Rosh Hashiva not have that? Pardon? Well, it's not fair. See, 1 second. See, that's judgmental to call a person shallow for thinking that. He's brought up that way.
I'm offended because I think about a certain way about people who wear hats because then they're making a call about themselves. Someone wear the hat. He says,
wait, let him finish. Yeah.
You'll understand. I also in terms of culturally, you go to Amsterdam, right? It's the norm there for people to smoke a lot. Let's say no. Okay, that's a good idea.
They have lots of norms. That's fair.
Exactly. So I'm a very, let's say, and I come from a very prestigious neighborhood. Let's say in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And then I go and I see this and I'm like, okay, am I supposed to like? What's my view supposed to be? According to this theory, it's supposed to be that they should be like me instead of like the way they already are. Yeah.
You can judge an action. What I'm suggesting is you have to try not to judge the person. So what you're asking is how do you separate the action from the person?
Exactly. How do you even judge their action now? But
there was once an extreme.
How do you even judge their action now?
Well, no. In other words, like, you know...
like, maybe that's the normal...
I'll give you a good example. If you grew up in Poland, okay, and you lived in Majdanek, you grew up there, and no one ever told you different, and you might not even know what the Holocaust is, although it happens to be they do a lot of Holocaust education with Polish kids, and you're on a date, and you're a Polish Catholic girl, and you meet this Polish Catholic guy, and you're looking for a quiet place to do whatever it is you do on a date. And Majdanek is this wide open area, so you're sitting by the barbed wire fence of Majdanek and you're having a picnic and you're doing whatever you're doing, right? So now I walk along and I'm with a group and I'm in Majdanek and I'm like in shock. There's a couple sitting there, teenagers, by Majdanek, 100 feet away from the gas chambers. So the act of a human being sitting in that place, making out 100 meters from the, is just off. It's so off that it should cause you an abhorrence. It should break your heart. It should cause you maybe even anger. But that doesn't mean that I judge the person. What do I know? If I grew up and I was a 16-year-old Polish Catholic Majdanek, you think I would behave differently? Probably not. So I can judge the action without judging the person. Now, how that impacts my actions, that's an interesting question. If you lived in Meir Shearim and you were brought up in a certain circle, in a certain yeshiva, in a certain way, and you were walking through Kikar Shabbat, and a chiloni car, a secular driver, whatever that means, drove through that area on Shabbos with the noise blaring, and it was your culture to scream out Shabbos, right? Okay, and so you're screaming Shabbos, and he's in a car driving on Shabbos, chas v'shalom. Okay, now I'm walking by. Okay, for all I know, he could be, on his way to a Red Cross meeting where he's teaching people how to save lives. He also could be a guy who says, let's go out and get the Haredim crazy. I have no idea, right? The act of a car driving on Shabbat in general with a Jewish driver in Yerushalayim, in my opinion, should cause you pain, but I wouldn't judge the driver, right? The guy in Meir Shearim, right? So he could be a guy who just, you know, he has nothing to do Shabbos afternoon, let's go find some cars and scream Shabbos. Or he could be a fellow who honestly believes that when a car driving through hears people yelling Shabbos, he'll actually think, why is this so important to him? And he'll be curious about Shabbat. By the way, I've met people like this. He'll be curious about Shabbat. It'll cause him to continue. And who knows, maybe it'll lead him to tshuva. There's a famous story with Uri Zohar, who was a porn star, who became a Baal tshuva, and that was what got him thinking. You never know. So the action, in my opinion, of screaming Shabbos at a car, I don't approve of that action. But that doesn't mean I would judge the person. Chas v'shalom.
The action of wearing certain clothing is the same thing then. Because the action of wearing certain clothing, you can only judge their actions. Maybe they want to be more, for them it's more comfortable, but you can't judge the person.
Absolutely.
But according to, like, some people...
You can never judge the person. You can always judge the action.
According to what some people said here, like, it's like, it's not a... It's... If you... By wearing certain clothing, like, I'm not, like, saying anything bad, but, like, you said this. You said, like, if you wear, like, no clothing, then you should... then she's trying to give off an image that she wants people to see her body and my body's all that. But that's... But in a sense, that's judging the person.
Right, right. In other words, that's a good example. If you see a girl, if a girl walks into the Old City and she's wearing a bikini, that would be an extreme example. And she's seen signs and people have told her, listen, you know, we, whatever, and loch patla. So then there's something wrong with that action. But if that same girl is wearing a bikini at the beach, which in my opinion is just as public a place as Yerushalayim, but let's put that aside. Maybe it's not a makom kedusha. So that person was brought up to assume that it's okay to walk around basically in your underwear, right? I wouldn't judge the person, but I can still judge the action. By the way, if... Pardon?
They could choose not to. Like, not everyone,
they don't know better.
They could choose not to. They might not know better. By the way, here's an interesting question. There are people who take it upon themselves. They're so offended and so upset by these actions and how they believe it impacts society and how it believes... They believe it impacts the spiritual level of Eretz Yisrael and that if the Jews aren't on a spiritual level, Mashiach won't come and whatnot. That they're willing to take their time and go out to the beaches and scream at people, you should cover up and you should dress. It doesn't matter whether I think that's ridiculous. It doesn't matter whether I would do that. You can decry sort of the way they go about it and still value the motivation that could be there. And the bottom line of that is you have a right to judge actions, but you don't have a right to judge the person.
But I don't... Forget using the word judge actions. I think, forget judging action, how you proceed to act yourself. If somebody's in there with a bikini and she's looking at a map, I might not necessarily go over and ask her if she needs help. It's the same if, like, there's, like, a guy...
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Whatever, fully dressed.
Absolutely.
So I'm not, forget judging...
We had a girl once who came into Israel. We had a girl, you know, we would have programs. And so there's people walking off the street. And we had a girl, and I'm a reasonably laid-back person in these topics, but this girl walked in here, and I couldn't teach the class. She came, she sat down in the front, and I couldn't teach the class. It was just like, it was horrendous, right? It was like, so I don't know, was she doing it for attention? Was she just totally oblivious to sort of how she looked and what she was? And the boys, no, this is extreme, trust me. And some of the guys who were there were also distracted by it, and some of them were quite pleased by it, and some of them weren't. So I went into the office, right? That's just me, and that's an extreme. A girl walks in a pair of jeans and a t-shirt, I won't say anything. But if a girl walked in like that, it was really extreme. So I went into the back room and I went over to Shlomit, or maybe it was one of the Madrichot. I said, look, there's a girl sitting there and I don't feel like I can teach the class. I can't teach the Torah class. We're in a base manager, but I really believe that I'll embarrass her if I call her aside. So could you help me out here? So she said, sure. So she came in, she sat there for a couple minutes. She said, oh, Benny had to take a phone call. And then she said, oh, you know what, I need some help from somebody. Could you give me a hand for a second? Hang on. And she walked her out. And then she said to her, listen, you know, you may not realize this, but out of sensitivity, whatever it might be. And then they found her a shawl, and she covered up. And she came back to the class in the back, and it wasn't a big deal, right? So you have a right to judge an action. You have a right to decide that you want to do something about it. You have a responsibility to take into account how you're going to make the person feel. On the other hand, if I was at a public lecture, and I didn't have the ability to do that, and I was invited to speak, and there were 500 students, anybody's waiting for me to speak, and this girl's sitting in the front row, I wouldn't walk off the stage. I would just have to look the other way, and, you know, it would affect my ability to public speak, whatever it might be. That's all. So, yeah, it affects the action. I don't think we put enough effort into realizing how easy it is to be judgmental and how valuable it is to not be judgmental. And by the way, where do you begin? You don't begin with talking about how it's good to be non-judgmental when we talk about Haredim or Chiloinim or wherever else. You begin with the guy sitting next to you. It's much easier to do this when we're just talking about the people in Tel Aviv, random, faceless groups. It's much harder to do this when you're sitting next to somebody. So somebody makes a comment, and you think that that comment is just off. I don't know. You're sitting at the table, and somebody says, you know what, we should just expel all the Palestinians, right? Just get rid of him. If we killed all the Arabs, we'd be better off, right? Irrespective of whether, you know, sort of in how and what I would respond to such a statement, right? In my opinion, that's just not the way to go. I think that's an off statement. I wouldn't judge the person. That's coming from somewhere. It's coming from an education. It's coming from his experience. It's coming from the people he's around,
you
right?
You think it's a racist comment?
Yeah, probably. Although even that... even in that instance, to define it as a racist comment presumes to understand something about this person. He may not even realize it's a racist comment.
So what's the difference between one who lies and a liar?
Pardon?
What's the difference between one who lies? Lying is an act.
The difference between one who lies and a liar, and I would never call a person a liar, I would say, exactly. Look.
He's a liar, he's supposed to be on fire.
Right. Right? Okay? I think that's just the difference of you know, sort of frequency. The person that is constantly lying, it's an addiction. Lying can be an addiction. So that's about sort of how often a person does it. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't call a person a liar because he's not a liar. It just means that I very often have no way of knowing, and there's no value to calling a person a liar.
But,
right?
But I'm not saying externally. I'm saying to yourself, you'd say, like, this person is a lying problem.
But wouldn't you think that it's a healthier way to say it, to say this person has an issue with truth and falsehood? His lines are blurred. He struggles with it. It's not semantics, because when you do it that way, it gives you that pause to consider. I don't know who this person is. I don't know where he comes from. I mean, if I grew up with parents who lied and grandparents who lied and everybody around me lied, for all I know, I'd be a habitual liar.
You also know his background of how often he's lying. If he lies just once, you can't just
But that doesn't mean that I shouldn't decry the falsehood if I think that it's wrong. Falsehood is not always wrong.
Well, we try to have a discussion, but if you keep... yeah, I agree with you on the first comment. You should never judge. If you keep hearing things from someone, you can't just always say, oh, we never, you don't know this...
No, you can address the action. If somebody was sitting next to me in this yeshiva, and he said, I think we should just kill all the Palestinians. So I would look at his face, and I would probably ask him, I said, well, do you mean that seriously? You're kidding around, right? Let's say he told me he was kidding around. Then I would address the question of whether it's appropriate to make such a joke, which I don't think it is. Let's say he said, no, I'm not kidding around. Really, think about it. I mean, I met a person who thinks that what we should do is nuke Iran. Let's just nuke Iran. Get rid of Iran. Nuke Iran. So they'll yell at us. They'll scream at us. You know, but... So I said to him, well, you'll kill like tens of millions of people, who most of whom are innocent individuals. So he said, okay, it's a necessary price you have to pay. Okay, so you can imagine that I disagree with that, right? Vehemently, right? But that doesn't mean I judge the person. Like, you know, what do I don't know the person. We can judge an action. We can have a healthy discussion. By the way, the ability to not judge your fellow human being is what allows you, we have to stop, is what allows you to maintain a dialogue as opposed to turning it into an argument. And I think this is something, of all the things that we've studied, this is something really, really worth giving your attention to. It's really worth working on it. It's really worth making it a part of who you are on a constant basis. It makes you a better person. It gives you more to contribute to the world. It opens up the doorways to dialogue, healthy discussion, and all sorts of other things. That doesn't mean you're going to be able to have dialogue with everybody. When you're on campus, I promise you, most of you will meet individuals, usually, you know, Arabs, very often Muslims, who are part of fundamentalist groups on campus that are, you know, they're set to destroy, to harm Jewish interests, Israel, etc. And, you know, as much as we like to value sort of the open dialogue, sometimes you just won't be able to have dialogue with these people. That's just the nature. Not everybody's open to dialogue. I still wouldn't judge them. I could disagree with them. And I could disagree with their actions, and I could fight their actions. Once you start to judge people, it fills you with anger. And that's not healthy for you. And that's really the next halacha. We'll get to that, okay? Yes?
Do you really think that every single time you judge someone, it fills you with anger? And what do you mean that when you judge someone...
It runs the risk of filling you with negative experiences and negative feeling.
What did you mean when you said that if you're not judging someone, you're capable of having a dialogue? If you are, you lead to an argument.
Right. When you're judgmental of others, they very often pick up on that. If you think that someone's, I don't know, an idiot... Or you think someone's bad, you know, you think someone's evil, as opposed to just his action being evil, you've precluded the possibility of, you know, of impacting him and of changing him, because he's an idiot. But if you think, well, that was a dumb thing to do, but I don't know the person, then it's worth sharing. Then it's worth discussing, right? You have to have a healthy awareness of when that, like, you don't get into a dialogue with a Nazi SS doctor on the platform of Auschwitz and talk to him about the sanctity of life. You know, besides
how do you
the
not judge that Nazi as like, because of what he's doing to you? He's doing something horrible to you. How do you not judge him? Like,
I can't
feel that anger towards
right.
him.
I can't tell you. I can't tell because I've never been in that extreme situation. I imagine that must be a very, very high level. I can tell you that I've met people who tell me that they were able to do that. There are stories about Rebbeim and Tzaddikim who didn't judge the Nazi tormentors that did what they did. They decried the evil, right? They believe that, and this is Hasidus at its best, they believe that Amalek is a tool of Hashem just as is Yaakov, right? I don't know if I'd be capable of doing that. I could tell you that I was able to do that when it came to, like, you know, terrorists. I was in situations where we captured people who wanted to do or in a couple places did terrible things. And I realized that if I started judging them as human beings, as individuals, it would just fill me with such a rage and such an anger. It would impact my life. And I refused to allow them to fill me with that rage. So I stopped judging them and who they are. I judge their actions. Nebuch, that a person gets to a point where he's willing to walk into a pizzeria and blow people up. Nebuch. Doesn't mean you don't have to fight him. Doesn't mean that if I caught him a minute before, I wouldn't blow a hole in his head. It's an understatement. You're right. It's horrendous. It's horrendous what's going on in the Palestinian Authority. They're educating a whole generation of children to hate and to maim and to kill and to murder. And you have to realize that those kids are going to grow up and they're going to be hate-filled killers and murderers. I don't know how many of them. I don't believe all of them. Some people are capable of rising above that. Some people aren't. It's an unfortunate reality in those instances that I think you're talking about a majority, right? I wouldn't judge the person. I would absolutely judge the action. Pardon? Right. Well, without getting too specific into this, I'm not sure there is a Palestinian people, but that's a whole other discussion.
Well,
but put it
right. Judge Islam, judge.
Well, now that's an interesting question. You actually can judge a religion. You can study what a religion teaches, and you can pass judgment on whether you think its teachings are good. You know, either in whole or in part. I believe that there are certain flaws in Muslim theology that are very significant. You know, so. That's a larger question. Anyway, I've kept you too long, which is a nice thing. And to be continued, Bezrat Hashem.